Welcome back to part two of the Anything But Quiet Time podcast this week. It was a part one last week with determining the relationship with God.
Yes.
That you have found these 5 points, these five relationships.
Relationship advice.
Uh-huh.
Cards. Writing cards. Getting a greeting card for a different event. Have you seen the one where... And again, I love these because they can be anytime cards. I don't think Carter believes in that though, because you're like, you get your parents an anniversary card. And I do. Yeah,
you do. Anytime cards make me repulsed.
Yeah, you sweat. I just
look at the back of $6.99 for a thing that I could have written. So sometimes I write a note on like a piece of paper that's free.
But if it does enhance the relationship, if you find out that Kelsey, if you found out all these years now you've been married.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know she really valued the card. You would go out of your way to get her one.
Yes, but she throws them away, and so, I'm so fortunate.
I know.
I'm a blessed man.
Now, unfortunately, my husband didn't marry that personality.
Hey, I do want to say, speaking of you, you threw me off with cards, because when it comes to relationships, my friends of ours, they get these card games where it's questions for each other.
Oh, that's fun, yeah.
And they just get to know each other. Yeah. And even as they drive, the passenger will
you
read.
You think you know
and,
a person.
Yeah, and so, yeah. And so if it's the newlywed game that they're ever going to play, they're going to win.
Those are great.
Yeah.
I will tell you that I tried to do those cards with my husband once after, it'll be 20 years in June.
Wow.
We got upset. So we just stopped playing.
What'd you get upset at? It's not a game.
It was like, I don't know. We probably have asked these questions over and over again. It was just like, oh my gosh, we're going to ask this again.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. It just didn't go anywhere positive. I don't know if upset was the right word.
Okay.
I tend to embellish and be dramatic.
Okay. I gotcha.
But it was kind of funny. It wasn't as fun and cutesy as your fun couple.
Yes. No. They're and they've been married about as long as we have, and they were giddy about it. I'm like, that's so cute. That's cute. Okay. So we're going to get to the last 3 points of determining the relationship.
I didn't bring up the whole reason why I brought up greeting cards.
Oh, please move forward. Yes.
Have you seen the one where there's a pickle on the front? And I guess, have you heard about me? And you open it and it goes, I'm kind of a big dill.
Yes.
And
yes.
I was one of those people when it first came out like years ago, I had to buy the card for no reason, except for the fact that I did laugh out loud in the card aisle.
So you bought it for you?
I think I bought it and then I just found somebody to give it to. And what's sad, usually if you buy with that approach, you are going to be so disappointed with their reaction because it's never going to meet your expectation of what it should be. Like, it's so funny. And they look at it and they're like,
why did you give me this? And how long do I have to hold on to it?
There's a pickle on me. You think I'm sour?
Okay. No. You last week said, can I get to, and I quote, Momo. Moses.
Yes.
I did not know you had a nickname for him.
Well, I didn't either until it came out.
And we'll get to that, but you're going to start with Abraham.
We're going to say, because Abraham, kind of a big deal.
Okay.
All of these DTRs, these are big deal moments.
Yeah.
Okay. And putting all silliness aside, I mean, God really is being the same person he was yesterday, today, forever. We've already talked about Adam. We've talked about Noah, the covenants that he's made with them. And it's all about their well-being and taking care of them and having a plan for them. And just kind of like what Jesus even says, all who are weary, follow me. I will give you rest. I mean, this is the plan since day one. And Abraham is one of these guys who starts connecting to those monotheistic roots of Noah and Adam. Mm. Once again, we've seen people going their own way, putting what they deem worthy up on this pedestal, called an idol. And perhaps the idol was just a convenient tool that they could use instead of just basically putting themselves up on the pedestal.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Because they're the ones in control of who they're going to worship and how they're going to worship and what that particular deity demands and all of that kind of stuff. Whereas the one and true God, well, you can't make, and you also can't demand anything of him. Mm. And there is nothing that you can give that he needs.
Yeah.
Whereas all these other gods, you know, it's empty. So Abraham is on this trip with his dad and his family and Lot, his nephew, and his wife, Sarah, and his father ends up dying. Terah dies. But Abraham is called out by God. And we really read more about the covenant that he has with him in Genesis 13. He's telling him that I am going to make a space for you forever. Mm. And I think that's really interesting, the terminology of forever. We see the Jewish people are still in that same area that we keep hearing over and over again, and it's reiterated in Exodus, the exact place, this is where I'm going to have you live. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And with Abraham, he tells him, through your line, I'm going to actually bless all the nations. So we start to see, if you will, some people could say favoritism with the chosen people. I don't think that's what it is. He chose that people because they chose to recognize him.
Sure.
Perhaps. Look, I'm not going to get inside of God's mind and tell you exactly his reasoning. But Abraham hears a voice and telling him to do a certain thing, and he's obedient. And I think that tells us, and we see that shared in, Samuel tells that, I can't remember if it's first or second, it's not really important, that God desires our obedience. That's what he does desire.
Yeah.
And that's way better than anything you can, he doesn't want your offerings.
Sure.
He wants your obedience. So Abraham offers up this obedient, whatever you would have me do. He even sees Abraham willing to sacrifice that valued part of his life, which will continue his legacy. I will sacrifice Isaac. God recognizes that and says, okay, no, you're not going to be the one to sacrifice your son. And we see this incredible moment where you connect that Isaac is the son who takes the wood upon his back for the fire, for the sacrifice, and they go up. This mountain range would have been in the similar part of where Calvary is going to be, right? Yep. And Jesus, the Son of God, carrying the wood upon his back, he will actually take upon himself the sacrifice for all mankind. There's this beautiful representation that God is not going to ask that of Abraham, but he will ask it of himself at some point. And there's this covenant made. And the land and the property is a blessing. The nations that will be blessed through your line. We know that Abraham was the great, 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 zillion great granddaddy to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that it would come through the line of Judah from David, who was of the line of Judah, one of the sons of Jacob. It's quite fascinating. Once again, God is saying, I will take care of you. I will take care of you. And I've got really big plans. And interestingly enough, Abraham, it's not just about you, because I'm going to bless everybody through it. Wow. So that's a DTR moment. And Momo,
we're Moses.
Appropriately named Moses.
Right.
He's a Levite. He's born in a time where the Egyptians are scared because the slaves are starting to outnumber the Egyptians. And they're having a lot of baby boys, and that's scary because, you know, there's strength in numbers, and if there's a lot of men, there's already a lot of women, then we're going to have more baby boys, and we're going to have more baby boys. They're going to take over our land. So Pharaoh makes the decree to destroy the baby boys. It doesn't work out that way for some, and Moses is one of them, and he's raised in the palace because Pharaoh's daughter finds him in a basket in the Nile. And it's an incredible story, and there's so much there to unload, and we can't do it. So we gotta skip a lot ahead.
Sure.
Story of Moses, though. I mean, it could go. That's why the one with oh my gosh, his name just went out of my head. Charlton Heston, like that movie I watched as a kid, and I didn't mind that it went on for 500 hours because I was so fascinated with
sure,
it.
Sure, yeah.
And that was a story I was familiar with as a kid who, you know, went to Sunday school. But there was so many things that they had to unpack with that story. But when God has taken his people through the waters of the Red Sea and he is bringing them into a place that, once again, like Adam, it's already prepared. There's already things that are growing there. There are civilizations there. And in fact, I'm actually going to give this land to, well, guess who I promised it to? Abraham. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it to you in degrees. Because it's not all the way prepared in some of those parts, and it would be too much of a task for you to take all at once. So God has got a very, once again, very organized, knows exactly how it's going to go. Going into some areas where these people are, we're looking back at, like, I think Noah's time, where the people were so debauched. Mm-hmm. They were just not, they were grisly people.
Yeah.
Moses is taking them into this area, and they've spent some time in the desert, and they're already complaining a lot. God is even, I think at one time, I wonder if God was actually really thinking about destroying all the people or if he was just testing Moses to see if he was in this to win it. Because he's like, I'm going to take him out. I'm going to take them all out, Moses. Mm-hmm. I'll make the people come. I'll make the chosen one come from your line. The chosen people will be from you. That I'll make a great nation of your kids. Moses begging, please. People are going to look at you like you're not the God who says something and sticks to it. Mm. You can't do that. But I wonder also if it wasn't for the fact that God knew that Moses was about to be put through the ringer over and over and over again. Sure. And to have Moses call out and try to be like the, I don't know, the defense attorney for these people,
yeah,
to prove to himself that I do love them.
Right, yeah.
It's that family. It's Cousin Eddie. All of them are Cousin Eddie, right? So on Mount Sinai, the people are invited to have relationship with God, to have covenant with God. They're terrified of what they see. It's a bit overwhelming. It would be to me too. It's like Pompeii up there. It just looks like fire and lightning. That's what it looks like. And this huge cloud, and there's a voice. There's just a voice coming out of the cloud.
Yeah, yeah.
The Egyptian gods didn't do things like that. And they don't, you speak to God on our behalf, and we'll just stay back here. But on that mountain, he's given the Ten Commandments, and the law is set up. And I've heard it put like this, the law is not a job description, but it's more like a doctor's prescription. Mm. If you do these things, you will be so much better off to not kill one another, to not envy, to not to make sure that I'm number one. Yes, these are established things in our covenant. I want you to do these things. It is for the betterment of your people. You will grow if you do these things. Mm-hmm. And what is the thing? I forget the phrase that you've used. If you read "don't do" in the Bible, read it differently.
Okay, there's two things that come to mind. I think it's probably going to be the second one. But one is when you read the Bible, make sure you know if it's being descriptive or prescriptive.
Yeah.
As in, is it just describing what happened? A lot of critics will point to the Bible and go, that's in there. You support that? Mm. No, because it's not saying to do that.
Right, right.
It's just telling the story of Lot and his daughters, for example. It's not prescriptive, right. Thank God. But then obviously certain things are prescribed.
Yes.
But I think you're thinking of a pastor that once said, a pastor that was at our old church that said, every time the Bible says to do something, mm-hmm. it's saying help yourself.
Yes.
And every time the Bible says don't do something, it's saying don't hurt yourself.
Yeah. And I'm really glad you brought up the other. I was thinking the latter.
The latter. Okay. Okay.
But the first one is so good.
Well, they're both very important, right? Yes. And what's interesting about the law of all those 613, mm-hmm. you know, commandments, because the first 10, you're kind of referencing with Moses, are kind of like no-brainers, right?
Yeah.
But then it gets very detailed.
Yeah.
And I've heard two things on it lately. Of one is the law was to show them and us how we couldn't measure up to God's standard. It's mm-hmm. it's. I mean, Paul even talks about that in Romans. It's going to show how sinful we are. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. I'd never heard of at least a take on the law on some of those where it kind of gets very dicey. Mm-hmm. You know, the rules for slaves, the rules for women, some of those things that people go, what's that about?
Yeah.
And the law was meant as a general guideline on some of those and not necessarily all specifics, because these were also instructions to judges in different towns, mm-hmm. and there were asylum towns, and there were all these things that it seemed like maybe there was some discretion where they were going to rule more mercifully. But if you really want to go black and white and you want to take it to the extreme in a certain, you know, somebody comes up to you as a judge and says, here's this case.
Yeah.
Well, here's your guideline.
I think it's interesting. There was a guy who used to be a substitute teacher at my high school, and he got a lot of flack for this, but it stuck with me. He would bring a book of like obsolete, obtuse, whatever, laws, actual laws. One of them was don't ever put a cow in a hot air balloon in Kansas.
Yeah, you can't take, and I think it's still in the books, you can't take a bite of another person's cheeseburger in Oklahoma.
You can't spit on the cement. You can't open a can of Coke.
Yeah.
I think was one of them outside somewhere.
Okay.
It was another one where it's like, don't ever have a whale at, I think it was a natural lake,
water lake. I screwed that one up.
To bring a whale in there?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, my word. But all these laws, and you're like, what the Sam Hill does that even mean? Mm-hmm. And then you go back into the story and you find the context for the story and why that became a law.
Yeah, true. And then it makes a lot more sense.
And then it makes more sense.
Yeah, that's true.
So God has established these laws and we're looking at them and we're thinking, well, law. And the word law, in this particular moment, I'm going to have to come back. There's a very specific word that should be replaced with law. It's not like a rule book per se. This is like, this is the prescription. I like that term better to do. Mm-hmm. This is something that is established by God. This is what is best for you. Do it.
Now, at the same time, clearly, if you don't, it is sin. It's very, because
he's establishing this is how you're going to know good.
Yeah, right.
From what's not good.
Right, yeah.
Moses himself is already a murderer.
Sure, sure.
He killed an Egyptian. And I think that people were just doing, and I mean, you read this all throughout the Old Testament. In fact, the book of Judges is filled with it, you know, people doing what they thought was good in their own eyes. Mm-hmm. And it got to that point where they were so far away from the law of what God had established, this is good, that it, I mean, they were just, I think I heard somebody say, do that. So I'm going to do that. You know, eye for an eye, it says in the Old Testament. This is what it says in the law. So we're going to, wait, why was that established in the first place? It was so that you would not do the bad thing. For starters.
Yeah. And so the punishment fits the crime and it's not some sort of crazy, you get 1,000 years in prison because you stole a bagel.
Hopefully people will recognize that what happens to you when you do the bad thing is not something I want. So I'm going to rethink doing the bad thing. Mm. And then hopefully we'll have civilization.
Sure.
A civilized society.
Yes. We are living in a society.
That's what I was thinking. Yes. George Costanza. Uh-huh. A lot of sitcom references today. So there's, I think in a nutshell, Moses and this covenant between God and his people, and you're right, establishing what is sin, and this is only going to lead to death when you do this. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that in, yes, the writings, especially of Paul, is what I was thinking of in the New Testament, where it talks about knowing there was no way that we'd be able to live up to this standard of perfection.
Yeah.
Jesus was already in the works. God's already cooking something up. It's in the DNA. It's in process. It's ready to go because I have a plan and I'm taking care of you and I am working on your behalf. You see it over and over again. If that wasn't so, waters would never have been parted.
Yeah.
Plagues would never have taken place. So it was already in motion.
What would your, in a one-line summary of determining the relationship with Moses be?
I think it's the same.
Yeah.
As all the others have been.
Okay. Okay.
I have a plan in place and you're either in it. When I say in it, I'm not like, you're not a part of my plan. No, like you're aligning yourself with that plan and you're going to see fruition. You're going to see good things. These are good things. You will prosper or you reject it. Mm. And we see, I mean, time after time where God pours grace out on these people who should have been destroyed. And there are definitely accounts where disease is allowed to take place within the camp of the Israelites. I'm calling them Israelites before they've been established as Israelites per se, but you know, Israel being Jacob, his name got changed. There's that one horrific scene. I can't imagine what that looked like when there was an earthquake. The earth swallowed up the bad guys. You know, there's that. Mm-hmm. That would make me a good woman from now on.
Yeah.
What does it say? Let me tattoo it.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, there were phylacteries, these boxes that they would put, mindfully so, on their foreheads or on their wrists. And it was Torah. It was rules. It was something they could apply so that they would never be without what God has to say.
But you... I look back often, I'm like, how do they keep screwing up?
I know, right?
But I try to slow down and go, these were multiple generations, and you see the kids nowadays, where if somebody older than them, I hope there's respect paid there, but sometimes there's not, where the older person's talking about the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And here's this kid rolling his eyes, you know, getting every sort of packaging, not take it for granted. They didn't have anything. And here he is, you know, a styrofoam this and a whatever, and all the food you can think of and rolling your eyes and not lived it. Mm-hmm. And so they don't get it. And that you clearly see happen in this part of the Bible, in every part of the Bible, but especially this part where, dude, some people got swallowed up by the earth like 70 years ago.
Yeah.
You should follow it. But
there's a lot of eyewitnesses to that, too.
But they weren't there, right? Yeah. They're not the future generations. They weren't there.
And they might roll their eyes, like you said.
And they might roll their eyes.
Yeah. And that's just that's human nature. Well, if I don't see it right now, I don't believe it.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, how many people did it take for people to believe that Jesus rose from the dead? Would you say 100? Slightly more than the number Abraham was asking about, right? When he asked if I find this many men in Sodom and Gomorrah, mm-hmm. if we can find that they're good men. They got down to 10 guys. Right. If I find 10 guys, then I'll save it. How many people would it take for you to believe that Jesus rose from the dead? Like, if you have an eye count witness in a murder case, that's going to be a key witness because they have an eye, they have a visual.
If 500 people all at once said they saw something happen,
yeah,
it would just be like, well, it happened.
Oh, we're on alliance that we'll probably be fed to the lions in the Colosseum, but of course that's an exaggeration, but why would they do that?
Yeah.
They had nothing to gain by saying that.
Sure.
And the people who followed that had nothing to gain, except they knew they had everything to gain because they got what Jesus had to give.
Yeah.
And Moses, you know, it is interesting when everybody said, we don't want a relationship like that with Moses. I mean, with God. Moses, you do that. We're going to stay over here. It is interesting that God still allowed, knowing, it's almost like the words that are in the New Testament about Jesus, knowing what was in man, was not surprised by anything that happened, you know?
Sure.
Knowing what was in the people, knowing their fear, knowing their background, knowing their context, God, in his compassion, he allowed them to be a part of building the tabernacle. You know, anybody who wants to bring money to help support this, anybody who wants to bring the right colors of wool and those who know how to make these kinds of things, anybody who wants to volunteer bringing gold, nobody was forced, Carter, but they ended up having so much that they had to send people, we got plenty, we're good.
Yeah.
That tells me, it's almost like social media when you hear something online where it's like, oh, everybody's talking about it. And there might've been like 10 to the 1,000, right? There were some real big naysayers in this group of people, but I still think there was a lot of people whose heart was in a line. They saw what they saw at the Red Sea. They saw God take care of them at the Passover. They saw and they revered God.
Sure.
They might not understand what's happening, but here's my gold. And I'm sure there were those that were just terrified out of their mind too.
Yeah.
But I thought that was still cool. I still want to partner with you. I have good plans for you. I love you. And the last DTR moment is David. And David wants a place where God can live. He wants a place where it's no longer like this moving tabernacle business. You know, the Ark of the Covenant is now in Jerusalem. I want this to be your home where you live. And God's basically saying, who are you? I mean, you're going to build me a house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need you to build me a house. Eventually, he allows Solomon to build a temple.
Yeah.
And he blesses that. But that's not David's job. That's a different story. I take care of you. And David is one of these kindred spirits with God's spirit, I think. He's all in. Yeah, he messes up. And when he messes up, it's like, mess up big or go home. But God still, loves him. And yes, there are consequences to the misactions, if you will, of what David does in his love affair and the calamity he causes on even the death of his son. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in David's history. But again, I think at the end of the day, we see with each covenant, I take care of my people.
Yeah.
And that is something that we don't get from anywhere else. Not enough things you can do for me. It's not about that. In fact, I'm going to send myself in my son form and I will die on this cross because you can't bear this. You can't.
Yeah.
But I will.
Yeah. It's really good. It's, Because I think when you're talking about Abraham, talking about, and this is also all the nations. So this is not just now Israel, but everybody.
It's you and me.
Yeah. And so it's keeping in mind, I'm very, you know, in Christian culture, we have a lot of people that will point to something in the Old Testament and go, that's about you and me too. Well, some of it's not. You know, you gotta be very careful because it's a promise to a specific group of people at a specific time. But the way you're describing all of this, right? And everything you've said is so true that I can latch myself onto that.
Yeah, you can
because
connect it.
He is totally for us.
Yes.
He's for, ultimately, I guess he's for us if we're for him. You know, he's the one, right? I get on board with him, but it's this invitation to come along and the blessings that come along with that.
Yeah.
When we get a chance to say yes and say, I recognize that there is something bigger than me and that it is the God of the Bible.
Yeah. It's really important to not test the Lord, because there's only one occurrence, I think, of testing God. And I believe that is in Malachi. It's about money. But I think testing and seeing that things are good is a different kind of testing. And just like you would check the behavior of a child, if this is behavior that keeps recurring, then you're going to know that that's something about that child's personality, something about their character that you keep seeing repeat over and over again. You can pretty much guess, okay, they tend to be thus and so, whatever the label might be. When you are looking at the character of God and it's the same thing, I mean, every single time. So that is why the story applies to you and me. Because he said to Abraham, first of all, this area, I love that he said the word forever. This is still applicable. And from the beginning of time with Adam, even Jesus being referred to as the second Adam, you know, this is where I want you to live, in a land flowing with milk and honey. I want you to have paradise. I always have. There will be a day. No more tears.
Yeah.
This is where we're going to be. And nothing has shifted or changed. There's no big surprise moments, except for maybe that moment when Jesus died on the cross and all the disciples who thought they had read the signs, everybody who thought, and still to this day, many who believe Messiah has yet to come because he's going to be a warrior type person. That was a shock. Wait, that's not, no, we're going to overturn Rome. That's what we're going to do. And God had bigger plans. He said, no, I'm going to overturn death.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit bigger of a thing.
Kind of a bigger thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. This is great. And this is, again, scratch the millennial itch of determining the relationship. We'll do a series next week on lowrider jeans.
Okay.
We'll get to, the when you wear the five collared shirts.
The five collared shirts.
Or 10 collared shirts sometimes. We'll get to the difference on the smell when you walked by Hollister as opposed to Abercrombie and Fitch.
That's really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And somehow along the way, the millennial to, is it the Gen Zer, where we have the low cut, the low rider jeans. Now we've gone to mom, full on mom jeans.
And high waters. Don't forget, it's now mom jeans with high waters.
Which, can I just say, that is a full recession.
Yeah.
That's just.
You know what? Can we just agree on something?
That's it.
We don't understand Gen Z. And it's, you know, this is such a great an alliance.
Well, we love you. And so does Jesus.
Yes, we do. I'll stop there. It is true. This is the Anything But Quiet Time podcast. We will see you next week.